Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Yesterday, there was another missile testing in Korea, North Korea, and it looks like it was a total failure. And this was in response to UN speaking harshly about the United States being aggressive. Of course, we do have a military buildup in South Korea right now. And it's massive, right up to the DMZ. It's even gotten the attention of the Chinese. The Chinese say, you know, with what you're doing in the radar that you're putting in there, it can even affect us. So it wasn't insignificant. But last week, as I understand, they did have some successful missile launches. Four of them went off, and they were supposed to be intermediate-type missiles, and that looked real good. And because there was a lot of back and forth, and everybody has to speak to their base, including our government, as well as UN has to always speak to his base, that he's not going to be pushed around by those Americans. So he was talking tough, and this was a big deal for him from my viewpoint, is to set this missile off and really try to warn the United States, look out, look out. But I think that was more, you know, for his people at home than it was that we were really going to back down. You know, we only have 15,000 of them, you know, as if that was a real thing. But when they went to do it, the whole thing blows up, you know, instantaneously as it takes off. And then the question really comes up, is this just more representation of a totally inept North Korean government? I want to put up on the screen this map that many people have seen before of North Korea. Is it this ineptness, or is it could it have been some cyber warfare? Just take a look at this. And I just think this should make us all stop and think for a minute that should we believe there's an imminent threat and that we have to do something very major? And remember the imminent threat that was coming from Saddam Hussein and the lies all the way to the UN, and people believed it. And we've suffered severe consequences since then. But here, this country, they can't even turn on its lights at night. It's not because they don't know where the switch is. There's no switch. So they're black. And yet, you know, everything we say, we have to stop them. We have to stop them. Yet there was this huge military buildup. You know, tens of thousands of troops of South Koreans and 10,000 of our own troops there. And I would think that as nutty as UN seems, he might not be totally irrational in that if we're right on his borders building up troops, at least to his people, they say, well, you know, they're up to no good and I have to react. So it's pretty hard to figure out exactly why we have to have these problems.
And it certainly plays into his hands, the fact that we're in the process of a month-long series of military exercises in South Korea. Just as they had this failed test launch, the U.S. was flying a B-1 bomber over the place. They were buzzing it. They were trying to, you know, to tell them who's boss. And it just plays into his hands. You know, I remember when I first started working for you, I went to Cuba with a congressional delegation. And they loved it. The government loved the sanctions because they could always blame everything on the sanctions. Oh, we don't have enough TVs. Well, it's the U.S. sanctions. Oh, we don't have any food. Well, it's the U.S. sanctions. And this kind of thing just plays into the hands of the U.S. is doing everything it can to prevent the two Koreas from coming together and solving their own problems.
You know, if it totally failed in Cuba, which some people will still argue it didn't fail, but I think the Castros outlasted our policies and nothing was improved, and they're still fussing over the final conclusion of that. So if it failed there and militancy, you know, fails, why in the world do we do these things? It's just so hard to say. And I sort of think of this in not just reading history, because so many of the events that have occurred with Korea are really embedded in my mind because I remember it very clearly. I was probably in high school, freshman or sophomore, when the North Koreans went into South Korea. It was a big deal. and thousands of troops. And then at the time, I didn't realize it, that we were about to go to war, and didn't realize the significance of Truman saying, oh, all I need is a UN resolution and we'll go to war. And here we were only 5 years at the end of World War II, and here we were ready to go and fight again. And the war is still going on. Officially, it's going on. And we've probably have spent $100 billion, over $1 billion every year to maintain the troops there. And think of the suffering that has gone on in a war that has not been won, in a war that we should have never fought. And there probably would be peace in Korea if we'd have gotten out, like we finally had to get out of Vietnam, you know, and allow the South Koreans to talk to the North Koreans. It's in their interests, and they're cousins, you know. They might work something out. But, you know, they say that there were 36,000 deaths in the Korean War, American deaths. And then there were over 4,000 are just missing. Mm. So it's really 40,000 that were killed. But there were 98,000 wounded. And just think how many people were wounded that went home and died or was never normal again and just suffered from it. So the cost goes on and on. And nobody seems to stop and say, why did we do it? Why did we go to war? You know, without a declaration of war, without the Congress acting, but Congress turned out to be complicit. They're complicit right now because they keep sending the money. And if the military wants to, you know, if the administration wants to confront, you know, bombastically and saying, we're doing this, don't get away with this, the Congress keeps voting more of this money. And then they wonder why people suffer here at home. Because every time you drain money out of the economy to do militarism abroad, believe me, the country gets poorer.
And, you know, the one big beneficiary to all this is, of course, the military-industrial complex. Because here we are, we say that, that Kim Jong-un is paranoid. Maybe probably true. So then we build up a bunch of weapons on his border, and if he's not paranoid by then, he's going to start acting paranoid, as any of us would, and then we say, look, he's even more paranoid. We need even more weapons to put up next to his border. So it's sort of the perfect scenario for both Kim and for the U.S. military-industrial complex.
Well, you know, I just had a thought. Maybe Kim Jong-un is a plant by the military. Maybe he's just there to keep things being good. But the big goal is to keep everybody afraid. And that's what happened, you know, in after 9/11. Everybody had to be afraid. It had to be perpetual, and it was always going to get worse. Even if you had to lie to the people, you know, the noble lie. I mean, you got to scare the people because they're not smart enough to know what we know. So therefore, we have to scare them. And here it is, and we look at that map, and yet the fear is still there. We have to do something, and nobody seems to challenge it. And right now, this is because of this missile failure. It made some news this morning because it just happened. But generally speaking, nobody's going to look at the big picture and the policy and say, why have we been there for 67 years? I remember also very clearly that 10 years after the war was over, it went from 50 to 53, and I was graduating from high school in 53, and that was delightful. That was Eisenhower coming, I'm going to end the war, I'm going to end the war. But 10 years later, I didn't realize where I might be then, but I was in Korea. I was in the Air Force. I had to go TDY, temporary duty, to Korea, fly to the various bases all the way up to the DMZ. And, you know, a lot of fear and confrontation. But it hasn't changed. Matter of fact, it's every bit as bad and every bit as stupid, you know, because they're not going to threaten our national security. And they're more of a threat to us economically, and they're more of a threat because of the disruption. But you say, well, what would you do? Just walk away? I'd just walk away. Maybe South Korea would think it's in their best interest to talk. Maybe Japan should have something to say about it. Maybe China. I don't think China is looking for a peninsular war. So I think maybe China would do more. But even the fact that the South Koreans might, our policies generally over the years has been to discourage the South Koreans from talking with their relatives in North Korea. And that was sort of what was going on in Florida and Cuba. We wouldn't even allow the Cuban Americans to send anything to the Cuban people because they said, oh, you know, if you send them too much toilet paper, that's going to help Castro. Yeah. You know, it's just so ridiculous. They just don't believe in talking with people and trying to work it out. They have to have this fear. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I'm afraid it's a money deal, and somebody's going to make money off war.
You know, we talked about this just a few days ago, and it's just so much in the news it's worth revisiting. But, you know, China tried to broker an agreement with the U.S., South Korea, and the North Koreans before these military exercises started to say, okay, North Korea, you'll stop launching these test missiles, and why don't you guys cancel these pretty aggressive military exercises? The U.S. and South Korea immediately said no, so they're not looking for any solution in that way. As a matter of fact, I think, if anything, the Trump administration is more bombastic recently. We mentioned that Rex Tillerson was in the region, and he said explicitly that all options are on the table. And we know that's code word for a threat. And the Wall Street Journal reported last week that the White House was looking at preemptive strike options against Korea. And just one other thing, I mean, they're not a paper tiger, even though they're not an imminent threat. Right. Eric Margulies, whose article we put up over the weekend, he pointed out that a decade ago they took a look at what would happen if a new war broke out in the Korean Peninsula. 250,000 U.S. casualties, 1 million Koreans dead, possibility of North Korean nuclear attack on Japan. They have the missiles, they have the capability. North Korea has 600,000 men in arms. So this could do a lot of damage, and the way we're going, it almost makes it inevitable.
I want to follow up on that about Tillerson, because I have that quote there, which sort of describes our policy and what he just said, you know, in the last day. He says, let me be very clear. The policy of strategic patience has ended. We are exploring a new range of diplomatic, security, and economic measures. All options are on the table, which means nuclear, of course. North Korea must understand that the only path to secure economic, prosperous futures is to abandon its development of nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles. They have to follow our orders. If they follow our orders, I mean, why don't we talk that way to Pakistan? Yeah. I think Pakistan's a potential enemy, and there's some danger there. India has it, but none of them are likely to attack us. And this whole obsession with building this fear it does not serve our interests in any way whatsoever. And yet, right now, it's building up. Once again, and ironically, Obama, before he left office, said that it was said that he was warning Trump, but he didn't warn Trump. Well, you know, maybe you could take a little bit different diplomatic approach, but he said this could be trouble, and I think we're moving toward trouble. Not that I think we're getting ready to invade them, and not that I think North Korea is they're not going to march across like they did in 1950s, but I tell you what, it's going to be costly, and things can happen, and China may get nervous about it, which they've already expressed themselves, but it's a reflection of a deeply flawed foreign policy, and it's very, very costly.
Now, that quote is very powerful in a way, because it underscores really how, for lack of a better word, insane our foreign policy seems to be. What Tillerson says to North Korea is, the only way forward is for you to abandon your nuclear weapons project. But that's exactly what we said to Saddam and to Gaddafi, and they both said, okay. And what had happened as soon as they abandoned their nuclear weapons projects, we attacked them and invaded them. So what kind of message do we send with our actions versus our words?
And they just were total denial. You know, remember the UN expose about explaining what was going on? And they really never had them, you know, same way with Assad and the poison gases, too. Yeah. You know, it's Assad, we got to go after him. He used poison gas. It turned out it wasn't his side that was using the poison gases. So it just goes on and on. And it's just astounding. Governments are willing to lie to their people. Can you imagine such a horror? But the lies go on, and the whole confrontation is based on the fact that we have this moral obligation, a legal obligation, and that we can do whatever we want. We are the policemen of the world, and therefore we must be engaged. But I just don't think that we need 28,500 troops spending over $1 billion every year in Korea. I don't believe it really has kept the peace. And I still think the best example of this is what happened in Vietnam. After all that tragedy of 60,000 Americans being killed, and we didn't just decide to leave because it was a bad deal. We decided to leave because we were getting our tail whipped. And it was so embarrassing, but we still left. And the world didn't fall apart. There was no domino effect. Communism was proving itself totally inept, and it wasn't favorable, and the Soviet system was breaking up, and that didn't happen. You know, and what do we do now? Yeah, they're far from laissez-faire capitalists, but I'll tell you what, they're a lot better off than they would be if they were still living under the Soviet system, you know, and that's what people were predicting. But nobody challenges that and say, oh, yeah, you know, you make a good point there. Maybe people would know how to take care of themselves if we weren't interfering. The French did it. We did it. Decades went on, millions of people killed, and then they say, well, I guess it isn't working, so we better just walk away. I believe very sincerely if we did a lot more walking away and not so much walking into trouble, whether it's the Middle East, or walking into the trouble that we've been doing for 67 years, and there's still this confrontation of building up the DMZ, and the people in America right now don't seem to. Well, this is just more than they need to deal with. We'll watch hearings on TV or something.
Yeah, about Putin. Well, I think the summary: the Trump administration seems like it wants to solve the Korean problem. They want to put more pressure on China. I don't know that China has the leverage that they think it does. They want more sanctions. Sanctions haven't worked. So it looks to me like they're trying to intensify a failed policy, an already failed policy. How can you have good conclusions?
Well, very good points, Daniel, and I'm sure the Trump administration will be calling you very soon to get up there and give them some good advice. And I think that the good advice is around. It's just that it doesn't fit into their program. And they do, I believe they're... Other than the fact that the military-industrial complex and special interests are involved, there's a lot of people who sincerely buy into this, that this is best for America, you know. And sometimes they do this. Best for America means best for my reelection, because if I don't vote for all this military spending, and because some of it's spent in my district, I might lose the election. There's a bunch of that, too. Very few of them approach it on principle in Washington and say, you know, what should we have? Should we have this whole idea that we know best for everybody and we should be the policemen of the world and we should defy everybody and do what we want? Or should we have a policy, which was suggested to us by our founders, that we ought to have a strong national defense and mind our own business? That, of course, would be the way I think we should go. I think that would open up the doors for us to have a program that would move us toward peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Please come back soon.